So during the Sundays of Lent, this being the first Sunday of Lent, and you know, the same for you. You don't have to eat fish on Friday if you don't want to. It's okay. You don't have to give something up. Although, if you do choose to give up chocolate, I would be glad to hold on to yours until after Easter, and I promise I will return it. There will be a storage fee, though. But during the Sundays of Lent, we're going to be looking at the many covenants that God has made with humans. Now, at the very heart of our relationship with God is the idea of covenant. It's how God chooses to relate to us. Now, why? Who knows? That's just how it is. And there are many examples of God's covenant with us throughout the Old Testament and culminating in the New Covenant in Jesus Christ in the New Testament. Regardless of the covenant, the terms, or who it includes, or any of that kind of stuff, the basic message of covenant between us and God is this: I will be your God, and you will be my people. And that's where today's story comes in, because it's a story of covenant, the covenant made with Noah. But first, we need to understand exactly what a covenant is. In form, a covenant is an agreement between two parties, and it involves promises to each other. The concept of a covenant between God and his people is one of the central themes of the Bible. And in the biblical sense, a covenant implies more than just a contract or simple agreement. So when you think covenant, do not think contract. The English word covenant comes from the Latin convenire, meaning to come together. And it presupposes two or more parties who come together to make a contract, who agree on promises, stipulations, privileges, and responsibilities. Now, in religious and theological circles, there is no agreement on precisely what's to be understood biblically, because it's used differently in different biblical contexts. In political situations, a covenant is kind of like a treaty. In a social setting, think marriage as covenant. Now, the word for covenant in the Old Testament, berit, provides better insight into the meaning of the word. It comes from a Hebrew root which means to cut. And that explains why covenants between God and humans in the Old Testament are often sealed in blood. Now, hold that thought in the back of your mind for the next 5 weeks. I know you can do that as we explore the many covenants God makes with us. Often, covenants in the Old Testament are sealed in blood, whether it's through circumcision or animal sacrifice. So hold on to that thought. Biblical covenants all have at least five things in common. One, they're made with some or all people. They may include non-humans. They may be exclusive with Israel or inclusive of everyone, depending on the covenant. Two, there are terms to each covenant. Three, there is always a visible reminder or symbol of the covenant. In the case of the covenant God makes with Noah and all creation, what is that symbol? The rainbow, absolutely. God's covenant always has something tangible associated with it. Four, God does not exactly give us the opportunity to opt out of agreeing to the covenant. Covenants God makes with us are God's gifts to us, and we have to accept them. Five, God does not enjoy the luxury of breaking a covenant, even and especially if we do. As it turns out for us, that's probably the best possible news we're ever going to hear. So, think mafia here for a moment. Think Marlon Brando in The Godfather, Don Corleone. I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. The Don's words sound civil enough, but behind them, there's a threat, is there not? His so-called partners can't refuse the offer, not because it's so good, but because the consequences of refusing are so bad. Now, forgive the imperfect analogy, but in a certain way of looking at things, God's covenants with us are offers we cannot refuse. So think mafia over the next 5 weeks, too. Now, the earliest covenant between God and humanity takes place in the first chapter of Genesis, in the garden with Adam and Eve. God creates them to be fruitful and to multiply. That's their end of the bargain. To caretake God's creation and to enjoy relationship with God. Now, you know, that's a tricky one because there's no explicit covenant. Nowhere does God say to Adam and Eve, I will make a covenant with you. It's an implicit one. And as for the symbol, it's kind of hard to pinpoint one thing in that covenant. But think about that. What is the symbol of the covenant God makes, or symbols? There's more than one with Adam and Eve. Nevertheless, the basic elements of a covenant are embedded in the Genesis account, even if it's not obvious. The man and the woman were blessed by God and were provided for their every need. God also made provisions for breaking the covenant, and it would be broken if they did what? If they ate the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The consequence was to be death. Well, you know what happened, right? They broke the covenant. Creation was affected because everything suffered the consequence of Adam and Eve's sin. And it began to suffer from decay and death, just like Paul talks about in Romans 8. So if you haven't been in the Romans Bible study, you have homework to do. If you are in the Bible study on Sunday morning, you've already done your homework. Yet God does not break his covenant with creation. Humanity did not come to an end. God continued and continues to bless and provide for all of his creation. Well, you know how that story ends, right? Fast forward to the 9th chapter of Genesis, which Laura just read from, and we see how badly the relationship between God and humans degenerates. So bad, in fact, that God chooses to destroy creation and start again. Well, most of God's beloved creation, and then have a fresh start. Because, like I said, God does not have the luxury of breaking covenant, even and especially if we do. But first, a joke for you. Ending his sermon, a preacher announced that he would preach on Noah and the Ark the following Sunday and gave the scriptural reference for the congregation to read ahead of time. And after telling this joke, I will not be doing that for next week. Well, a couple of boys noticed something interesting about the placement of the story in the Bible. So they slipped it to church before the next Sunday and glued two pages of the pulpit Bible together. The next Sunday, the preacher got up to read his text. Noah took unto himself a wife, he began, and she was, and he turned the page, 300 cubits long, 50 wide, and 30 high. Anyway, back to our story. Noah was a good and obedient man. He stood blameless before God. He was in constant fellowship with God. He walked with God, as Scripture puts it. And we're told that he was a righteous man. He lived his life according to God's will, even if the rest of the people around him did not. And because of his righteousness, as the story goes, when God decides to destroy everything and give the world a fresh start, God assured Noah that his covenant with creation, the covenant made with Adam and Eve, would not totally come to an end. It would continue through Noah and through Noah's family. God would save a remnant of the creation, and life would continue. And that's a common theme throughout the Old Testament, that no matter what may happen, God will always save a remnant of God's people so that life will continue. But that's a different sermon. Well, after the dove returns to the ark with an olive branch in his beak, Noah knows that the water has begun to recede and that God has kept his promise to not destroy everything and to give life another chance. So God says to Noah, I now establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you and with every living creature that was with you, the birds, the livestock, and all the wild animals, all those that came out of the ark with you, every living creature on earth. I establish my covenant with you. Never again will all life be destroyed by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth. This covenant, the Noahic covenant, is between God and humanity and all of creation. This is a universal covenant. God's part of the covenant, that is, God's terms in the covenant is that God will not destroy all life on earth with a flood. Now, terms for us in creation come before in verses 1 through 7, which Laura did not read. And you're going to recognize these words: be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. And you must not eat meat that has its lifeblood still in it. And for your lifeblood, I will surely demand an accounting. I will demand an accounting from every animal and from each human being too. I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being. That's our end of the covenant, the terms. And as for the sign, and God said, this is the sign of the covenant I'm making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. And whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. And whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures of every kind on earth. Hey, you know the story from when you were a kid, right? Nothing new here. This covenant between God and all creation is still in effect today. Today, we begin our journey into another Lent, and hopefully your thoughts are beginning to move in the direction of examining your life in light of obedience to God's claim on your life. So in the week ahead, as you think on this covenant God makes with Noah, the Noahic covenant, I ask you to consider this. How have we failed to live up to our end of the Noahic covenant? Because in this covenant, we have responsibilities and not just benefits to enjoy. Responsibilities to God, responsibilities to each other, and responsibilities to all of God's creation. Are we faithful to those responsibilities? Does the way we live pay honor to the creation that God has always called good? Are we good and faithful stewards of the earth and all that's in it? So that's your homework for next week. And for next week, we go on to the next covenant, the covenant that God will make with Abram/Abraham. Now, as we do the affirmation of faith, you will notice in your bulletin that it comes from Deuteronomy 30. It comes from the very end of the book of Deuteronomy. In the book of Deuteronomy, the majority of the book, Moses is standing before the people and is giving them the law. That's the law with a capital L. That is the terms of the covenant that God makes with the people at Mount Sinai. And this goes on for several chapters as the people are assembled. And so at the end of this super long speech that Moses is giving the people comes these words. It's as if God already knows what's going to happen. It's as if Moses can already see the way things are going to go and do go. And so these words are given to the people. So if you'd stand as we affirm our faith, and we'll use this through Lent.